In that post-battle period, Dystra was quite emphatic that when they took over the running of the Kuru nation from Hastinapur, the city of the elephant, that Dhritarashtra, the old blind king, should be given all the respect as he had when he was king himself, and Yudhishthira himself would always defer or arrange or get agreement from him whatever was asked for before implementing it. And generally this worked pretty well. All the brothers had been given their jobs. Bhima was in charge of the army. Arjuna, important job, looked after all the boundaries. I think Sahadeva was the actual assistant to Yudhishthira. But I'm afraid the exception to the rule was Bhima, who just couldn't get over Dhritarashtra being in the same sort of position as he was before the battle. Well, it all came to a head, really, when Dhritarashtra's brother Vidura really told him the facts of life. He said, here you are, in comfort, doing this, ordering that, what have you, just as you were before. Who do you think you are? What actually are you doing and gaining for yourself in your development of yourself, where you, in reality, are eating the food off the table of the king of Yudhishthira and his brothers, and you have all this authority, and what are you doing for it? Nothing. Well, that was the vein of things, and so it was agreed in actual fact, after discussions with Brahmin and I think Vyasa came in on the scene, that in fact the blind king and his wife Gandhari would actually go to the forest for their final days, and the Pandava's mother Kunti, the daughter-in-law to them, would go along with them to help them, as would Vidura and Sanjaya. Dhritarashtra had got some comfort because at some stage around this time, Narada, the travelling rishi, came and actually told him that he should go to a hermitage in the forest, and after 3 years he would actually die and go on to the land of Kubra, the god of wealth, as one of the semi-deities where, in fact, he came from. So that really actually put him at ease. He had no fear, really, of the future. And he and Gandhari had been carrying out a lot of penances, and of course this enabled them to actually intensify those. Well, interestingly, it was, if you know, the heart of the city had disappeared when the old king and his wife and the others actually went out. And it was almost like a deep depression. There's an enormous amount of suffering and grief that continued over for an awful long time, which you could say had been sort of anchored or been made compatible because of the central old figure to give continuity of a life in Hastinapura. In fact, I think it was Sahadeva who went to Yudhishthira and said, why don't we go and see them and see how they're getting on? Because they're very concerned too about their mother Kunti going there and how she would survive it. She was a younger one, but of course she had a lot on her hands looking after them. And all the brothers, including Yudhishthira, had really lost interest in being in charge and governing and looking after. Supplications were made to them. They just weren't doing the duties they should be doing. In fact, the only person who was really holding things together was Parikshit, young Parikshit. Remember the little boy who was brought back to life by Krishna immediately after the battle. So Yudhishthira actually called everyone together, discussed it with the brothers first, and it was agreed that they would go out. He said, we'll go out forthwith tomorrow. And they would go with the whole army, and Yuyutsu, the last remaining son of Dhritarashtra by a serving girl, and Dormia, the family priest, would be left back at the city to look after it. It was really an open invitation to anyone who wanted to go along, of the townsfolk, and actually people living in the provinces too. In reality, of course, in fact, Yudhishthira gave them 5 days for people to gather to come who wanted to go, and eventually they set off. And it was quite a large gathering, because not only the army, but all the townsfolk and country folk. Yudhishthira was resplendent on a gold-faced chariot and his white umbrella. Bhima was on an elephant, and Arjuna his chariot and white horses. And the twins were on horseback. And there were a lot of elephants and camels and horses and so on. Well, after quite some time, and they went at a pretty slow pace, they weren't hurried in anywhere at all, they crossed the Jumna River, and on the other side, they could see one or two of the ascetics, the holy men, who told them where to go. And it was a matter of following the path along by the river. So they left all the chariots and the animals, and the army folk and the townsfolk followed along this path with the brothers at the front with the Yudhishthira, of course. And as they got nearer the hermitage, they quickened their pace almost through excitement. And then suddenly they came upon the hermitage, and immediately Sahadeva rushed forward because he saw his mother, fell at his mother's feet weeping. The old blind king was there, tears in his eyes, and it was really a great reunion. After a lot of introduction of who is who and what have you, Yudhishthira bought a whole lot of presents, basic common sense stuff too, like pots and pans and blankets and ladles. Ladles, you know, with the scooped end for putting ghee onto the sacrificial fire, and ladles with double ends and bits and pieces like that. After they'd all settled in, the old king invited them to eat with them. They ate roots and they ate fruits and drank the river water. After which beds were made up and they lay down by the riverbank, ready to sleep. The brothers were given very comfortable beds. So then they saw their mother a little distance away, lying on the ground. So they quietly got off these beds and lay around her. And they chatted. They chatted amongst themselves. They chatted about the old king and Gandhi, about this and that and what have you, until sleep overtook them. The following morning, Yudhishthira, having performed his rites and all the normal early morning ablutions and so on, with a number of the others, went around the hermitage. Dotted around were altars and bright fires burning, and the smoke curling up from where the ghee was being fed onto the fire, and the murmurings and chanting of the Brahmins. And so began a very pleasant stay of probably up to about a month. And then Vyasa, Rishi Vyasa, came to visit them. He came with disciples, and they prepared a seat for him. They got some deer skin, and on top of the deer skin, they put the kusha grass, the holy grass, and on top of that, a piece of silk material. As he came into the clearing, the Pandava brothers got up, and they came towards him, and they touched his feet and gave worship to him. He asked them to sit down, and so they did all around him. And he explained that he'd come to perform something that no other rishi had been able to perform. He said, "I know Dhritarashtra's grief, and Gandhara's grief at the loss of all her sons, and of Draupadi, the loss of her sons, and Subhadra, who is also there, Krishna's sister, at the loss of Abhimanyu." He said, "This day you will see what I can achieve through all my many years of penances." And he turned to his son, he turned to Dhritarashtra, and spoke to him just as a father would of his son. He asked him about this and that. Was he comfortable? How were his penances going? And all this thing. He said, "I've come to give you a boon. What would you wish?" And then Dhritarashtra said, "I can't get over of the enormous suffering caused by my son Duryodhana. I can't get over how I have been responsible for the death of Bhishma and the death of Drona. I'm devastated by the evil that my son has done. And by thinking of this all the time, I get no peace of mind. I grieve day and night." So he didn't really answer the question, but Gandhari took over. Gandhari said that for the last 16 years, this man, my husband, can never sleep at nights because of his grieving. He breathes heavily. And for myself, I cannot get over the loss of my 100 sons. And she asked him if he could make it so that she could see these sons. And then actually he turned to Kunti, asking the same question. She said, "I know you're grieving. Can you tell me what is in your mind?" Although he knew it already. And she went through the fact that Karna, her firstborn, she'd actually disowned. And she explained in some details. And he very touchingly at the end said, "You have no sin." And she explained that really she wanted to see Karna. So he said to them all, he said, "This night go to the banks of the Bhagirathi." Bhagirathi is a sort of tributary to the Ganges, that comes to the Ganges, and wait there. So the women with Gandhari went off to a certain place along the bank and all settled together, as did the blind king. And the blind king, as a boon, was given the ability to see by Vyasa, and they waited there as well. As darkness came, Vyasa came forward, and he plunged into the waters and summoned in an enormous voice all the warriors. And very shortly could be heard an enormous din coming from the actual waters themselves. It was as if the actual battle, or the battleground, was coming up from the waters. And then amazingly, the waters broke and there was Bhishma, there was Drona coming out of the waters led by the other kings. And they were on their chariots, they're on the horses, just as they would have been on the battleground. There's Virata and Drupada and their sons, and the five sons of Draupadi, with Abhimanyu and Bhima's Rakshasa son, the Katugacha, and Karna, Duryodhana, and Shakuni, and the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra, headed by Dushasana. It was incredible. And the thing was, there's no animosity, there's no pride, no anger, no jealousy, nothing of that nature whatsoever. And around them were Gandhavas, the singing gardeners who sang their praises, and there were bards who waited on them and sang their and chanted the various deeds they'd done, and they were waited on by the apsaras, by the divine nymphs. And they were all there on their chariots with the banners that they would have had at battlefield, with brilliant earrings and this sort of celestial clothing. Sons met fathers, wives met their husbands, friends met friends, brothers met brothers, and everywhere you looked around there was happiness. It was a night of happiness. There was no grief, no fear, no suspicions. And most people who were there looked upon it almost as if it was heaven itself. It was like a great big carnival. As this night of happiness wore on, slowly the dawn began to appear, and then the great conflagration, the great meeting, all the warriors, they too began to disappear. And at that point, Vyasa came into the water, and with a loud voice he cried out to all the widowed ladies, he said, "All those ladies who want to join their husbands should plunge into these sacred waters, and you will go back to the abode of your husbands." And at that, a whole lot of women turned to their fathers-in-law and sought permission for them to leave and went back into the waters. And they could be seen getting on chariots that, in fact, were there for them. And they could see the actual changing of their vestments, their clothes, to celestial clothing. Then, suddenly, it was finished. They were gone. So let me finish with the words of the sage Vaisampayana. He was a disciple of Vyasa, and he is the narrator virtually all the Mahabharata. And remember, this was being actually narrated by him to the grandson of Arjuna, King Janamajaya. And he was at the great snake sacrifice. And of course, it's at that sacrifice that the sage Ashtika saved the Nagas, saved the snakes from extinction. Vaisampayana said that any person hearing this amazing event will meet with everything that is dear to him or her, either here, now, or the hereafter. And he said of the reciter that the reciter should have a good voice, good utterance, possessed of good learning, not too slow and not too boring a voice. So whether I fit the bill, who knows? So I must give my greatest thanks to Nayak, Devashishu, Prachar, for the opportunity of sharing this great epic with you. And of course, my greatest thanks to you who've been good enough to listen and walk along with me those paths in all directions through this great epic. Goodbye.